Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org or on the WDIY app. Podcasts of prior shows are available on all of those sites as well. Today is June 22nd, 2022. The markets were slightly down today, trying to be in the positive throughout the day, kind of going back and forth, and finally landed just slightly down. The Dow closing at 30,483, the NASDAQ at 11,053, and the S&P at 3,759. Our topic this evening is gifting and inheriting. We will take your questions. Eric is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. The number for questions is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. If you prefer not to speak live, give your question to Eric and he'll write it down and bring it into the studio and I'll do my best to answer. Tonight's topic again, gifting and inheriting. And I thought this might be an interesting topic to discuss because I often get questions about gifting. You know, whether it's making gifts or receiving gifts. And, you know, I think there are a lot of assumptions out there that people understand this, but that's not necessarily so. And some of the assumptions you might have in gifting also may not be accurate. So I think it's really important to have some understanding around this to avoid really big mistakes. And I'll give you an example of that as I go through this. So gifting is what's done during lifetime. And somewhat related to that is inheriting. And that happens after someone has passed away. So I'm going to break it up into those two features, gifting and inheriting. So we're going to start with gifting. And I often get the question, how much can I give away? And a lot of people even will answer it themselves. They say, can I give $10,000 away? And so there needs to be some clarifications on why do people ask those questions? What does it mean? They might have had some memory of gifting maybe from their parents or gifting from something in the past. Maybe attorneys might have spoken to them about it, doing estate planning. So we want to put some structure around this. So when someone asks, how much can I give away? We can give away whatever amount you want to give. But what you need to understand and know are, several points. So I thought I would kind of break these down. One, what does gifting assets away do to my own long-term goals and needs? So when someone says, how much can I give away? There is a number I could give you and some explanation around that. But I think more importantly, you need to ask how much can you give away and what will that do to my long-term goals and needs? Second thing is how much do I want to give away and to whom or to what? What being like an organization or a nonprofit? 3, what does it mean to the person who receives the gift, and what do they need to know? And do I have any reporting requirements for the gifts I make? And that reporting requirement is usually what leads to that question of how much. So I will go over that as we go through this. So first, though, I think what's most important before you start giving money away, and let me just give you a little framework here, that there are assets that you can give away. It could be, you know, different forms. But you really have to understand what it is that you're giving away. I had someone who recently, we discovered, had given away some asset that they, or part of an asset that they had inherited. They didn't understand the value of it. It was a small company. They did not understand the value of it. And it was a foreign company. This is a U.S. citizen who gave away shares in a foreign company. They didn't understand the value of it and just said, yes, give some to my children. And several months later, into the next year, in preparing a tax return, we found out that this person had made this gift. So we inquired further, what did you give? How much? To whom? And discovered that the value was extremely high. The person did not understand the value. They did not know what they had given away. I mean, they knew that the asset that they gave away, but they didn't understand the value of the asset that they gave away. And now there's some, you know, hoops that we have to go through and some valuations that have to be done to determine whether there's a gift tax problem or not. So that goes back to the reporting requirements for the gifts. When it's over an annual exemption amount, we have to report those gifts. So I'll go over that as we go through this. But when we talk about how much can we give away, we have to understand not only the value of what we're giving away and how it impacts us meeting our long-term goals, we have to understand how much we're giving away before we do it so that we know if there's certain reporting requirements and valuations that we need to get. So please, please, if you plan on doing any gifting of significance or with unknown values of property that you may own, you really, really need to seek professional guidance. And this person was told to seek that, chose not to. You know, an excuse I heard, and we talked about this with Jim Ruggiero a couple weeks ago, is, you know, people don't want to pay the legal fees. Well, oftentimes the legal fees are what help you avoid higher legal fees in the future, trying to correct or fix or resolve something you did without being proactive. Remember, at the end of every show, I say be proactive, not reactive. This is what we're kind of talking about to avoid these kinds of situations. So again, when someone is considering making gifts, you really need to think it all through, and you know, a good starting point always is to make sure that you understand the impact on your own financial situation first. In that story I just said, if there is a gift tax in that gift, that large gift that was made, if there ends up being the valuation comes in high and there is a gift tax, this person doesn't have the money to pay the gift tax because the assets are all tied up in a business. So therein could be a problem. You have to understand your own financial situation. So we are going to be talking about gifting, what it means to the person making the gift and what it means to the person receiving the gift and some implications around that and the reporting requirements. And then as we move through the latter part of the show, we're going to talk about inheriting and what it means when someone inherits and the different kinds of assets that someone might inherit and what the implications are to that person, the heirs receiving those assets through whether it's an estate or as a beneficiary. And hopefully we'll be able to fit all that in. If you have questions, would love to hear them. I've missed our listeners' calls and questions last couple weeks. So if you have them, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Eric. He'll write it down and bring it in to me. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Did you know WDIY public affairs programs and features are available on all major podcast platforms? Listen anytime on the go at Apple, Google, Spotify, or NPR One podcasts and apps. Just search for WDIY 88.1 FM and you'll find a variety of award-winning public affairs programming from the Lehigh Valley. Listen and share with your friends and family where you get your podcasts and introduce them to many choices, real voices.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1, also available on the WDIY app and website, wdiy.org, or yourfinancialchoices.com, where you can also send questions. You can call in and talk live with us on air or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing, 610-758-8810. And we're talking about gifting and inheriting tonight. In particular, before you start making gifts, consider your own financial situation. As I mentioned, if there is a gift tax to pay, if you make such a large gift, and we're going to talk about those numbers later, such a large gift that you're going to owe a gift tax, then you really have to make sure that you have the means to pay that. So that's part of the financial situation, but the other part of the financial situation is, what does it do to your long-term goals? I've seen people make incredibly generous gifts to charity during their lifetime, and then they are left destitute in their later years. I've also seen the same thing happen in families when a parent felt compelled to help their adult children, and I've seen this leave the surviving spouse working into their 70s. And then they still run out of money. So one of the parents in one of the situations just kept helping their son and helping their son. They needed it. Also helped the daughter and was incurring incredible income tax consequences on their tax return for all this money they were taking as distributions from retirement accounts to help, you know, pass this or give this money to their children. And then, you know, the husband eventually passed away and left the wife, and she had to still work into her 70s because there really was no money left. And in both of these situations, the other one being that the woman was giving so much to charity during her lifetime, they were both working, these women both working into their 70s to make ends meet, but they both ended up having to move in with children. And you have to, you know, understand that not every adult child that you may have would be willing or able to take you in. And sometimes there are no children. So if you really are kind of financially responsible for your own long-term care needs eventually, and hopefully you won't need them, but if you are and you don't have children, you really need to make sure that you have your own financial security intact before you start making large charitable giving or, you know, gifting to family and or friends or, you know, it doesn't always have to be children. So one suggestion I have made for people who are in a more fragile financial circumstance, but who are charitably inclined, so they really, really want to give to charity, one of the suggestions I say is, well, you know, in case you were to run out of funds, maybe in lieu of making your charitable contributions while you're alive, just wait to make those as part of your estate plan. So you postpone your charitable intent until you've passed away. You can do that as part of the estate planning, and that way you make sure that you have the financial resources needed while you're alive. And funds that may be needed for your own long-term care will be there. And if not needed, then you might say, you know, on to charity. So, for example, If one of your larger assets might be your IRA, you could always name a charity as the beneficiary on it if you didn't have other, you know, heirs that you wanted to pass those assets to, if it, in particular, again, if you were charitably inclined. What if it's not for charity but for your children? So your children, you know, might be struggling a little bit and you really want to help them. And in lieu of just handing money over to them, as those examples I gave earlier, just moments ago, possibly leaving yourself and or a surviving spouse destitute or relying on that child, maybe instead of just giving them cash outright, consider doing a loan instead. And you want to make sure that you enforce the terms of the loan and that the children, if you are going to do that, have the means to at least pay you. So that sometimes works out. What I have seen probably too often are parents who will set it up as a loan because they're nervous. These kids who need the help obviously may not be have or show financial strength. So it makes the parent feel better to act like they're making a loan instead of a gift, but they don't really make the child pay them back and don't write it up and make it official. And you really need to, but that is one way to kind of secure that asset, at least, that if you did make a loan, that you kind of secure it in some way, whether the loan is, you know, like a mortgage or if it's a personal loan. You want to prepare an amortization schedule with interest, and the IRS does apply certain kind of guidance around this, that it, depending on what the amount is, and if it's like an intra-family loan, they do expect for certain types of loans, typically the larger and longer term loans, they expect that there is a minimum amount of interest. And if you don't charge that interest, then it would be deemed, let's say, a gift. So if you do make it as a loan and you're going to charge interest, there is an applicable federal rate that you use depending on the structure of the loan. So you want to just do it all legit. You can even see an attorney to do it to make sure that it's all documented. And then that's an asset for your estate if you were to pass away. And that way, if you have, you know, more than one child or you're doing this for a niece or nephew, that it's kind of brought back in and, you know, everyone would be treated fairly. So let's pretend you have a $300,000 estate and you gave a $100,000 loan to one of the children and you have four children. Well, that $300,000 plus the $100,000 loan is $400,000. If you have four children, four ways, then perhaps that loan could just be written off that way. So that's one way to kind of make sure that you're keeping everybody equal and fair. But if during your lifetime you needed that money, at least you're getting a monthly payment on the loan that you gave that child. All right. So consider, instead of gifting, maybe making a loan. And usually when I'm talking about this, it's usually the larger amounts. I'm not talking about, you know, $50 or, you know, $500. So some people, I think if they help their children out, that their children will take care of them as well. But that's not always the case. So there's no guarantee just because you've helped out that child that they're going to take you in. I have seen it, but I've also seen it where they aren't taken in. And, you know, you don't want to end up in the nursing home, the lowest cost nursing home, because you gave all your money to your child and you're not getting the care that you imagined you might have earned from all of your hard work. Now, the difference between charity and family in considering the gifts and the impact on your financial situation is that the charity owes you nothing, while your family may feel some responsibility to you. So if indeed you do run out of money, there is a chance the family could step in, at least in these stories, and provide some care or, you know, help fund care that you might need or take you in. But if you're the person who's giving all the money to charity during your life, they don't have to come back and take care of you. So just keep that in mind as well. But no guarantees either way. So when we come back from this next break, we're going to talk a little bit about how much, when we talk about gifting, how much. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is Sue King. Here at WDIY, we love our members because their contributions make all the great programming you hear possible. Rob from Bethlehem recently renewed his membership and said, "Keep up the great work. WDIY is the right place to listen on the left end of the dial." Join Rob and become a WDIY member today. Visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 4.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We are talking about gifting and inheriting this evening. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air or give your question to Eric. He'll write it down and bring it in to me. Let's talk about how much. So we've talked about making sure that you understand your own financial situation and the impact that gifting may have on your future financial situation. Let's talk about how much for a bit. So you may have already had amounts budgeted into your long-term plans and don't expect it to impact your future financial needs. So often when we're doing a financial projection, a financial plan, if we know that someone is charitably inclined, we do build that in. And then that gets monitored, periodically. Now, caution should be taken if material amounts are to be given, out of the ordinary. All of a sudden, the church has a capital campaign, and that might not have been in the budget. We want to make sure that that still, would work or would be reasonable. You also want to think about the best way to give. You might have done, as I said, outright gifts to family members, or you might have done loans. For charity, giving may be done in cash, appreciated securities, donor-advised funds, or qualified charitable distributions from IRAs or individual retirement accounts. So there are various advantages to each of the giving strategies for charitable giving, which I can cover a little bit later. But what about when giving to family members? So cash outright, you could do a direct payment on a debt. You could do real estate, appreciated or depreciated securities. And in deciding what you're going to give, you kind of have to understand the amounts and how you're going to do it. I'm going to go ahead and mention the amounts for the annual exemption for gifting right now. I was going to talk about it a little bit later, but let me mention it to kind of keep this in perspective. So quite often people will say, "How much can I give?" And they'll say, "Is it $10,000? Well, for years and years and years, the annual exemption for making a gift where you did not have to report it to the IRS was $10,000. That was adjusted several years ago for inflation, and it moves up periodically. And for 2022, we are at the $16,000 amount. So you can make a gift to an individual in the amount of $16,000, whatever, whether it's cash or securities or paying something for them, up to $16,000 per person. Lori Siebert could do $16,000 to any individual. And that could add up quite a bit. I could do it to 100 people, 10 people, 5 people, however many people I want. As long as it's $16,000 to any individual, there's no gift tax reporting on that. That's the exemption amount we're talking about. If I decided to give $32,000, let's say to one of my children, Now I'm over the exemption by $16,000. I am married. A spouse can join in that gifting, so he can give $16,000. I can give $16,000. That's $32,000 to any one individual. If my child is married, I could give $16,000 to that spouse. My husband could give $16,000 to that spouse. So technically, my husband and I could gift $64,000 to my child and their spouse. So this is where I get nervous about when we talk about these amounts, because I said you have to make sure that your financial situation and your goals will still be met if you're doing any kind of this gifting, because really you can gift quite a bit quickly. This is really important for the people who are very high net worth, who are trying to avoid the federal estate tax on estates that exceed the lifetime exemption. And that lifetime exemption, folks, is like $12,060,000 at this point, which is quite high. Most people don't get to that exemption because most people don't have that much in assets. But we still have to report those gifts that are more than the annual exemption to any one individual on a gift tax return of Form 709. So I can talk about more of that. I wanted to make sure I did fit that in, because I'm already taking longer talking than I had meant to. So those are kind of the big numbers that we have to pay attention to. The annual exemption amount, pretty easy. The federal lifetime gift exclusion, which is tied to the federal estate tax, it's the same exclusion. You don't get it twice. You get it once, whether it's at your death or during your lifetime in gifting. $12,060,000 in 2022. That is set to sunset in 2026, and it'll drop down to about half of that, I expect, with some adjustments for inflation. So what kind of gifts can we do? I said cash or check outright. That's easy. It's an easy way to gift. If it's under the $16,000, super easy. No big deal. We've already made sure that we can financially handle it. That's an easy gift, and that's to individuals. There's the limit for charity. It's not really a limit, other than there could be a limit on how much you could deduct on your tax return. So we want to be smart about any gifts that we're making to charity and make sure we do tax planning. Some other easy ways to do gifting would be to make some direct payments. So if you make a direct payment for on behalf of a child, a niece, a nephew, a friend, for tuition, it is not considered a gift, or for health care directly to the medical provider. So tuition directly to the institution and medical expenses directly to the institution, those are not considered part of your gifting. So that is really an easy and wonderful way to gift. Gifts to minors, so minors less than adult age, can be complicated if done directly to them. And that's because typically gifts to minors, if you want to set it up like in a bank account or a savings account, or you buy them a CD or something like that, there are rules around that. It used to be the Uniform Gift to Minors Act. Now they call it the Uniform Trust for Minors Act. That would be reported in that minor child's social security number, but typically the custodian is the person who's made the gift. Like grandma might have made a gift to your child, and she sets up an account, and she gets the mail, and she makes maybe the investment decisions. She gets the statements. Well, she also gets the 1099 at tax time. Because remember, that it might be their address, but it's reported in the child's tax ID number. And where it gets complicated is that child may now have to file an income tax return, and it could be related to the parent's tax return if the income gets too high or is over a certain threshold. Then we are subject to possibly to a kiddie tax, which is basically a tax at the parent's rate on the child's unearned income over a certain threshold. So you really, really want to consult with the parents to see if it makes sense to do, you know, kind of an outright gift to the child. Now, granted, if you give the kid $500 cash and they go buy, you know, some computer game, that's not probably going to cause problems. But if they set up an investment account, that's where it could cause some issues. So you might want to consider making a gift to a college savings account, a 529, in lieu of doing gifts directly to the child. And you might be the owner of that, or you might not. Your child could be the owner of it, and you don't have to be the owner if you don't want to bother with it. So the amounts are out of your estate, and if you are the owner, you still control the account, and you can even change the beneficiary. So that's a 529. Real estate's a little bit more complicated, and I'll talk about that after this next break. The phone number, if you have questions, is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY Allentown, the time is now 6:30, and your current temperature right now is 70 degrees. Tonight is going to be heavy rain, low 62, Thursday high 72, Thursday night low around 60 degrees. And starting your weekend Friday, you're going to have patchy fog, high 84, Friday night low 61, and Saturday is going to be 86 and sunny, Saturday night low around 60. Now, back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, give your question to Eric. He'll write it down and he'll bring it in to me. We're talking about gifting and inheriting tonight. This is really important stuff, and it applies to a lot of people. I mean, I work with a lot of people, and eventually you are someone who may be passing assets down to heirs, or you may be the one inheriting. So this is information that will impact you, and gifting is also quite common. Real estate, we talked with Jim Ruggiero about this a couple weeks ago briefly. You know, just be careful if you think you're going to have your transfer real estate to your kids. You just got to be careful. You got to know what you're doing. You know, are there going to be strings attached, like you retain the right to live in the property? That has implications. So really, really, if you're doing anything with real estate and gifting, you really should involve an attorney. They need to be consulted. They'll know the ins and outs and the best way to do that. Gifting securities like stocks or mutual funds, that is a little complicated as well, especially for the person receiving it, because they have to have like a brokerage account. So you have to first make sure they have one. You also have to know the cost basis and the fair market value of the positions that you're transferring. So for valuing the gift, the donor uses the fair market value. So remember I said the annual exemption, $16,000. If it's more than that, you have to file a gift tax return. That is based on the fair market value. Here's where people often make a mistake. If I've had people say, oh, my dad gave me that stock years ago, and it was worth such and such when he gave it to me. Well, I don't care what it was worth so much as when he gave it to you as what his cost basis was. I need to know what the cost basis was. So typically, you are gifting appreciated securities or stock that has a cost basis less than the value on the date of the gift. So typically, you're giving away appreciated securities. That's because usually you don't want to have to sell it and claim the gain on it. So instead of that, you think you're doing some clever estate planning and you gift it to your kids. I'm not recommending this necessarily. I'm just saying this is what I've seen happen. So again, you gift appreciated securities. Cost basis is less than the value of the stock, or less than the value of the on the fair market value of the date of the gift. And so in that situation, the donee, the person who gets it, takes on the donor's cost basis and the holding period. So if you bought it 20 years ago at $10 and 20 years later it's worth, you know, $100, well, the cost basis is 10, the fair market value is 100, the fair market value is what's used for the gifting valuation. The $10 is used for the cost basis, and that carries forward to whomever you transferred it to. So in my story, if it goes to a kid, the kid now has the stock, cost basis of $10, holding period 20 years. Your kid might not have even been alive when you bought it. The holding period is long term, as long as it's more than a year. So the donee uses the original cost basis in that story. In the rare circumstances where the fair market value is less than the cost basis, so the fair market value is less than the cost basis, this might occur like if it's like a business interest or something like that. The cost basis for reporting gain and loss is going to depend. So if the sale is less than the cost basis, but more than the fair market value on the gifting date, there's no gain or loss reported. And even if you wrote that down, you're not even going to be able to understand it. So just know that if you gift anything that has a cost basis that's higher than the fair market value, then you have to communicate to the person you're giving it to that this is a little complicated and you're actually going to have to track both the cost basis and the fair market value. If the cost basis is less than the fair market value on the day they give you, it's easy. You just track the cost basis. So if the sale is more than the original cost basis, then that cost basis is used. All right? So the important things to take away here is to know the fair market value on the date of the gift and the cost basis and the holding period. And the person receiving this needs to know this information. What if you don't know the cost basis? Well, the IRS assumes the cost basis is zero if you don't know it and you can't, you know, prove it. So if it's a position that you still really like and you want to retain it, it's just that you, you know, haven't been able to sell it because you didn't know the cost basis and you didn't want to have the gain, well, then you can keep it until you die. Because right now, under current laws, if you hold these positions until you die, it gets a step up in basis, or it could be a step down in basis. But in my story, it's a step up in basis. If you don't know the cost basis, I said it was zero. You die, it gets valued at the date of death, and it gets a step up in basis. And now if your heir sells it like that day or the next day, as soon as they get their hands on it, there's a chance that there's no gain or loss to report because, you know, the date of death values of the current fair market value, you sell it at fair market value and boom. So that is one way to alleviate the unknown of an unknown cost basis. Sometimes, you know, we just lose out on that opportunity when we have a situation where there might be a very, very, very large estate and they're trying to manage a federal estate tax. Sometimes they have to do gifts of, you know, maybe property or interest that they might not have a cost basis on, but have to gift it just to kind of do some estate planning. So sometimes you've got to weigh which is more important, avoiding a federal estate tax on future appreciation or, waiting until you have that date of death value for the step up. You could also donate those kinds of position to charity. That is what you could use to fulfill your charitable intent. I often will have clients who have low cost basis on a position that they'd really rather get rid of, but they don't want to have to report the gain, but they are charitably inclined. Well, that's the first kind of place we will look to fill charitable intent, to transfer appreciated securities in a position that has a low cost basis that they want to trim anyway. That goes to charity. You don't have to report the gain or the gain on that stock, and you get a deduction for the fair market value if indeed you itemize and are above the standard deduction threshold. So you do not need to know the cost basis in that circumstance. Gifting can be made to a trust as well. And in these circumstances, you kind of look to see who's benefiting from the gifting and determining any applicable exclusions. So if you have set up maybe an irrevocable trust, not a living trust, but an irrevocable trust, maybe for the benefit of three people, and you put some money in there, well, then those three people then were applying the exclusion based on those beneficiaries. Sometimes gifts are made and evaluation may be needed, particularly for business interest, as I mentioned as one of the examples at the top of the show, because that may be really, really important. You might think the business is worth a particular value, but maybe no one is going to buy that business. It's going to stay in the family. No one else has maybe the expertise or the goodwill that's wrapped up in the business, family name, whatever it might be. So you may need a special valuation. So you want to make sure that you get that done as well, particularly if you do have a federal estate issue and you're trying to manage a federal estate tax exposure. You want the property, the business valued properly by a qualified appraiser or business evaluator so that the IRS will accept that valuation and, you know, it aligns with your estate planning. An attorney would definitely be important in these circumstances, as well as in establishing, you know, what discounts might be appropriate, what restrictions might apply to those interests gifted. You want to make sure that you understand and follow all the threads. Like, is there a future transferability problem or are there liabilities associated with this so that if you are, you know, someone wants to gift you something, you also want to make sure that you're understanding what you're getting and if there's any landmines, you know, involved with it. So as far as the gift reporting, when we say how much, I mentioned the annual exclusion 2022 is now $16,000 per person to any individual. I had mentioned if it was made directly to an institution for tuition or medical purposes, that doesn't count at all. That's not part of the annual exclusion. So you could pay tuition for your grandchild of $25,000 and you could fund a 529 for them with $16,000. And maybe they're in a top school and that kind of takes care of their first year. And you didn't have to file a gift tax return for that. See how that works? So the tuition, medical, direct, annual exclusion, and then between spouses, there's an unlimited marital exclusion. I'm not referencing non-U.S. citizens here. Just for U.S. citizens, there's an unlimited marital exclusion. You can gift to each other. And, of course, the lifetime exclusion, as I mentioned, was $12,060,000 set to sunset in 2026, which is one of the reasons why you may want to consider gifting now if you think you have a federal estate problem. So these are kind of bookends on my discussion of gifting, the bookends being the front bookend was make sure that if you plan on doing any gifting that you understand the impact to your own financial situation, whether it's a current impact or a long-term impact into your senior years. And the back of the bookend is the federal, you know, estate exemption. So you want to make sure that don't gift more than you should, but if you have a federal estate exemption exposure over that amount with a 40% federal estate tax exposure, again, on amounts over $12,060,000, then you definitely want to think about gifting. And just remember that you can also split gifts with those spouses. And you report those gifts on a gift tax return, a Form 709, and you sometimes even report gifts that are less than the annual exemption if you're doing more sophisticated estate planning, for example, funding an irrevocable life insurance trust, and there's reasons why you sometimes still want to file a federal gift tax return to report those kinds of gifts to show that you, you know, are you know, possibly taking advantage of generation skipping tax and implications and things like that. We have a caller on the line, Manish from Mukunji. Hi, Manish, can you hear me? Manish, can you hear me? Okay, we're going to try again. Manish, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to try to make sure that we have you. And if for any reason we lost you. Do you want to try again? Can you hear me, Manish? Okay, we're going to take... Yeah. Oh, there we go. Hi, how are you? It's Lori.
Yeah, good.
Good. How can we help you?
So you mentioned like $16,000 we can give as a gift to kids or anybody. Mm-hmm. So can that $16,000 be like tax deductible too? Or
no.
Like,
we can... No, when we're talking about individuals and that $16,000 annual exemption, it is not tax deductible unless, Manish, you make that gift to a college savings account, 529. If you are a Pennsylvania resident and New Jersey residents, I think it's going to be new for 2022 for particular plans. But in Pennsylvania, if you are a Pennsylvania resident, we can make a gift to a 529, and as long as we have the name and social security number of the beneficiary and we have income of that amount, then we can take it as a deduction. And it could be $10,000, it could be $5,000. But if I put $20,000 into a 529 and I'm single and I put it into my, you know, nephew's account, I can, if I put in $10,000, I can only take a $10,000 deduction. If my income is only $9,000 and I put in $10,000, I'm only going to get a deduction of $9,000. So you can, that's the only way you get a deduction, I would say, on gifting would be to a college savings plan. And in particular for Pennsylvania, they don't care where that 529 plan is, and they don't care your relationship to the person either. It's quite a liberal policy in deducting the 529. But otherwise, no. Gifts to charity are deductible if you itemize deductions. And if you don't itemize, then I suggest to people at least use appreciated securities, because then at least you don't have to recognize the gain on the sale. That would be non-reportable. So that's another way to kind of get a deduction. So does that answer?
Yeah, but the 529, the 529 will get only the state benefit, not the
Correct.
Federal one.
Correct. But the other benefit for the federal purposes and for state for a 529 is, as long as you use that for qualified education expenses, to the extent you invest it and you have earnings, those earnings grow tax-deferred, tax-free, if used for qualified education expenses eventually. So that's the incentive for a 529 plan on the federal side. It just happens that Pennsylvania also follows that and does not tax any earnings on the 529. So PA, get the deduction on the contribution, and you don't have to recognize the income if used for qualified education. It's not subject to income tax for fed or state. Does that help?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you for calling. I appreciate it. Folks, we are going to our next break, and we will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services, including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is Sue King. Here at WDIY, we love our members because their contributions make all the great programming you hear possible. Rob from Bethlehem recently renewed his membership and said, "Keep up the great work. WDIY is the right place to listen on the left end of the dial." Join Rob and become a WDIY member today. Visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 4.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're talking about gifting and inheriting, and I have probably about 10 minutes to talk about inheriting. A little tight on time. If I don't finish up, I'll do another show on it eventually here. So let's talk about inheriting. Different than gifting. Gifting is during lifetime. Inheriting is when someone has passed away. So we already talked a little bit about, I've referenced a step up in basis when someone passes away in regards to if someone had some securities that they didn't know what the cost basis was. Remember, I said instead of maybe giving it away, you could hang on to it till you pass away, and then you get a step up in basis. That could also be a step down in basis, meaning if you die and the stock market has, you know, plummeted, then the basis is could be lower than what you paid for something, that becomes the new basis for the person inheriting. Now, keep in mind that the step up in basis, and that's typically how we describe it, applies to certain assets, capital assets such as non-qualified accounts, which is like non-retirement accounts, your mutual funds, individual securities, bonds, that type of thing, real estate, personal property, collectibles, that type of thing. That gets a step up in basis. It does not include individual retirement accounts or annuities. Some people, don't understand that. And that's because those assets have a specific designation in the IRS world, which is income in respect of a decedent, because IRAs and annuities receive certain tax-favored treatment during lifetime. They're not going to give it to you when someone dies, and you actually have to recognize the income from those types of assets if you inherit them. So typically an IRA is something that someone put away money on a tax-deferred basis, never paid tax on it. Well, when they die and now you've inherited it, the IRS does eventually want their money. That's income in respect of a decedent. Similar to an annuity, you invest in an annuity, you don't have to report any of the income until you take a distribution. Well, you invest in an annuity during your lifetime, you never take a distribution, and all that income has built up. You paid, I'm making this up, $40,000, and now your annuity's worth $100,000. You die, you never reported any of that income, you never paid tax on any of that income. If now someone inherits that annuity, it's income in respect of a decedent to the extent over the basis of the annuity. So in my story, I paid $40 for the annuity. It's worth $100. If I have now inherited it or someone inherits it, now they're going to have to pay tax on the $60,000. Typically, what happens with both IRAs and annuities, there may be payment options that a beneficiary can select to kind of spread out the tax consequences of that possibly over time. Annuities, it depends on the annuity company. It could be different. It could be 5 years. It could be over your lifetime. It could be over a minimum distribution period. You could make the annuity your own. There's a number of different options. It depends on the contract. So you would have to review that if you're inheriting. Make sure you understand what they are. IRAs, currently spouses can kind of take over the IRA. There's certain designated beneficiaries that may have more options on inheriting an IRA. But since the Secure Act of 2019, most non-spouse beneficiaries, other than those that are designated beneficiaries, have to take it out within 10 years. So that's inheriting. Now, let's talk about the taxes on, what does this mean when I inherit something? Do I have to pay taxes? Well, there's a couple, different kinds of taxes, and we have to understand that. And as the person who's doing estate planning, it could be important to you to understand what kind of tax implications your heirs or your survivors are going to have. And it would be really important for them to understand what kind of tax consequences they have. So inheritance and estate taxes, quite often we see provisions within the documents that say, my estate will pay the inheritance tax or the estate tax. Quite often we see that. Not always, but quite often. Sometimes the inheritance tax and estate tax, it will actually provide that it has to come from that beneficiary's own share. So if that's the case, and in Pennsylvania we have an inheritance tax, if it's to a child, it's 4.5%, siblings 12%, other non-siblings or children 15%, spouses 0. So, you may have to pony up the inheritance tax if there is that provision. So it would really be important for you to know if that's going to apply before you cash out the whole doggone thing. You also have to know what kind of asset you're inheriting, because you may also have to pony up the income tax. So remember, I said if you inherit, let's say, securities, investments, and they're in non-retirement accounts, I told you you get a step up in basis on those. So if you inherited those and you really needed the money and you sold them like the next day, chances are you might not even have any gain on that. If the estate paid the inheritance tax on those assets, you really aren't out of pocket too much at all. But what if instead you inherit the IRA, $100,000, and unbeknownst to you, you didn't realize the will said the inheritance tax has to come out of your share. And you also didn't think about the income tax because you don't understand these things. And you cashed in the $100,000 IRA, and you didn't realize that maybe that puts you into the top tax bracket. And maybe the income tax on that is, 37%. Well, now we have 37% for that, 4.5% for inheritance tax. You could be out, almost 40-41% before you even get the money. And yet, if you didn't plan for it, you could have spent the $100,000 before you had any of those taxes. You have to, as a beneficiary, understand what you're inheriting, understand what your responsibility is as to the inheritance tax, potential estate tax, and or income tax. Are you inheriting an income in respect of a decedent kind of asset like an IRA or an annuity? Do you understand what the implications are? The nice thing about IRAs is you do have this window where you can take it out and kind of plan it so that you can be ahead of it. And you also can have the tax withholding taken out of it as you make a distribution. So if you if you inherit $100,000 and you decide to take $10,000 out a year and you're in a 15% or 12% tax bracket, you can say withhold 12%, withhold 22%, and then just the net would be distributed to you. If you do end up having to pay or front the inheritance tax, again, much rarer than, is typical, then you could do a little planning on that as well and make sure that you have the funds upfront and available for that. So taxes could be inheritance taxes, estate taxes. Again, with an exemption of $12,060,000, it's not often we see the estate tax. Typically, it is from the estate, and especially with assets that high, quite often there would be money available to pay those. If the will says that the estate is responsible for the inheritance tax and there are no assets in the estate, then the state authorities who have an inheritance tax, the federal authorities, the IRS, can come to the beneficiary for that share of tax, even if the will said the estate has to pay them. If there's no money in the estate, the IRS and the state officials will get their taxes. It will come out of your share. So keep that in mind. Don't spend the money before you understand the situation. All right? So we've talked about gifting. We've talked about inheriting. Just real quick again, when we talk about gifting to charity, I did just want to add, and I had said if I had time, I would include this, about just being smart about your decision in charitable giving. I really don't like to see people impoverish themselves to be charitably inclined, because people are not always as charitably inclined toward our destitute people in their senior years who have no money. You can't rely on them. So make sure that you have planned out your charitable giving. Be smart about it if you are going to do it. If you have to take out a required minimum distribution after age 72, then, or at age 72, you could do it directly from your IRA to charity. At least you're not having to pay tax on that money. That could give you a little bit more wiggle room. If you're someone who's not required minimum distribution age and you have sitting on securities with either no cost basis or that you don't know what the cost basis is, so it's just something you've been hanging on, that would be an opportunity to do some charitable giving with that. So just be thoughtful when you're having discussions with either family members or your attorney or your financial advisor about any gifting that you plan on doing during lifetime, and or any of your estate planning, how they marry together, work together. For me, estate planning includes making sure that you actually have an estate for those senior years, your twilight years, making sure that you have assets available for yourself. Folks, coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.